ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi there. Just a heads up. This episode of Parental as Anything Teens deals with self-harm and mentions suicide. If you need extra support, we've put some resources in the show notes.
It was a very hot day. She came back from school because she wasn't feeling well. And I saw she was wearing a lot of hair ties in her wrist. I'm going to help her to take them off. And that's when I saw the marks on her wrist. One of them was infected and it was kind of blistery. And that's when I asked her, what's going on here? What happened? Did you do this to yourself? And she said, yes. And it was like the world stopped. You know, like yes. It was a feeling like, was like, am I angry? Am I extremely sad? I couldn't put it in words because it was just such a shock.
Imagine discovering your teen has been self-harming, deliberately hurting the body that you've spent years nurturing, cuddling, patching up.
I say, why? And she was like, I don't know. We kind of got stuck in a circle of, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. So I decided to stop there. Then later that day, I went and talked to her again and asked her whether she had done it in another part of her body. And she said, yes. And she showed me her lower abdomen.
Yeah.
And again, it was lots of marks, lots of marks. So when I saw it, I went like, and she immediately covered herself. It was a mistake. I shouldn't have done that because obviously she felt judged and everything. But honestly, Beck, I couldn't have done it differently. It was shocking.
I'm Beck Sparrow. On this Parental as Anything Teens, what to do when your child is self-harming. Self-harm is a way of dealing with emotional distress and is something often kept hidden. And it's more common than you might think. A quarter of young women aged 16 to 24 have self-harmed, according to the latest study of National Health and Wellbeing. Sam, which is what we're calling all our parents on this podcast, was blindsided when she found out her daughter had been hurting herself.
She is amazing. She's great. She is 15. She is a really lovely girl. She's very kind and caring. She's a great older sister.
Yeah.
She has a few amount of friends, but very close ones. And I know her friends love her a lot and are very loyal to her.
Her daughter had managed to keep her self-harm a secret from Sam.
I feel terrible as a parent because we had no clue. Like, we didn't see anything on her. She didn't show any signs of the struggles or any change in her behavior or seeing friends or school marks or nothing, nothing. And I was very lost when I found out about my daughter. Like, I didn't know where to go, what to do. Do I take her to the hospital, to the emergency department? What do I do?
What kind of help were you able to get her?
So I was very lucky to find a psychologist 2 or 3 weeks after this episode. But it comes to all the kind of practical things, you know, like, okay, let's review, let's check your room and see if you have what you have been using. I had to ask my daughter something that was very shocking because I never thought I was going to ask her. I had to ask her, do you want to kill yourself? And the worst part, it was like, I didn't know the answer. I didn't know when she was going to say yes or no.
Yes. What did she say?
She said no. Yeah. She said no. She has always said that she has never felt suicidal.
Oh, Sam, this is tough stuff. Sarah O'Doherty is a psychologist and president of the Australian Association of Psychologists. In her practice, she's dealt with teens who have self-harmed. Sarah, can you help me understand why is it that teens self-harm?
Things like feeling overwhelmed emotionally and unable to manage and control those really big and often scary emotions and thoughts that the young person might be experiencing. And so in order to regain a sense of control and also to provide a focus for that pain, they might then choose to engage in self-harming behavior. There's also instances of wanting to feel. For instance, if they're experiencing a low or depressed mood, their emotions might be flattened out. And so if they're wanting to experience any kind of sensation, this might be something that they perhaps turn towards.
So, Sarah, this is really foreign to me. Like when I think about I'm feeling stressed, that would make me feel frightened at the idea of cutting into myself. So how does hurting yourself, how is that appealing?
As an adult, I absolutely agree with you, Beck. However, we need to understand that adolescents are very much prone to impulsivity, that they don't have the distress tolerance and emotional regulation skills that we might have developed through our later adolescence and into adulthood. And so they might be more willing to try something that they've heard about, that they believe might give them a sense of relief or a sense of release.
Sarah, how common is self-harm?
It is quite prevalent. Government statistics talk about roughly 10% of adolescents have self-harmed in the past 12 months. A lot more kids have thoughts of self-harming, so roughly 25%. But we need to understand that because self-injurious behaviour is often really hidden, these stats might be underreported.
Earlier when you were saying that the kids who are self-harming then try and hide it, why do they try to hide it?
It's often around either shame or embarrassment. They might have an inkling that it wouldn't be encouraged, let's say, by the people around them. And so they don't want this coping strategy taken away. So it is often quite hidden and quite private.
Sam and her husband are still trying to get their heads around the why for their daughter.
From what the psychologist told me at the beginning of all this is that she's struggling emotionally. My daughter is gifted. She's in the gifted kids class. She's extremely smart. And apparently it's a very common thing for kids that are gifted to do this or struggle with managing feelings and the cognitive part, because apparently they know a lot cognitively, but they are not emotionally mature to process all this.
Yes, right.
So they kind of overthink everything. So there is no real cause. I haven't been able to work out what. And at one point a few months ago, I stopped looking for the why.
Yeah.
And why? And it's just, I'm just focusing more on the getting better. It's like,
yes,
we're going to get through this.
Sarah, is there a group of kids who are more likely or who are more prone to self-harm?
The existing statistics and also what I see through my clinic, it seems to be a lot more common in girls than boys. So the statistics around young females wanting to self-harm and acting on that self-harming behavior is roughly about twice the amount of young males who actively self-harm. And when we're talking about marginalized identities, so people seen as being different in any way, that might also contribute to their likelihood of self-harming behavior.
How about gifted kids like Sam's daughter? Are they more likely to self-harm?
Gifted kids tend to be very cognitively focused. They're all about their intellect and their thinking styles and being able to solve problems. And so that additional weight of feeling stressed and needing to perform can absolutely impact on a person's self-esteem, and it can impact on how they think and feel about themselves. And so when we're thinking about gifted kids, they are potentially setting themselves really high expectations, or maybe these expectations are coming from external people or situations. And these kids, particularly if they have a label, any kind of label, if they are seen as being different, then that can also amplify their sense of despondency and despair if they are experiencing low periods of mental health. And maybe that might also contribute to their likelihood of self-harming.
Sam's child started self-harming at about 14, and both her parents were incredibly shocked when they found out that she was hurting herself. And there weren't any signs that she was distressed or struggling. So what What signs should parents be watching out for?
The main sorts of signs that parents can be looking out for look a lot like general changes in the behavior of your child. So they might resemble depression symptoms. So things like changes in their mood, becoming a little bit more sullen, withdrawing or avoiding social events or other things that they might have previously enjoyed. It might also be wearing clothes that might be inappropriate for the weather, or it might be making excuses for injuries that seem a little bit unusual.
Sam reacted quite understandably with shock when her daughter showed her the full extent of the cuts on her body, and she feels like she didn't respond the right way. As parents, we're just all trying to do the best that we can. But what is the ideal way to react in that situation?
Sam's reaction is an absolutely normal and natural reaction. There is a difference between how we automatically or instinctually react, which is that shock response, and then how we choose to respond afterwards. And if we are responding in a way that is either punitive, angry, shutting down that kind of behavior, then potentially a result could be that the child aims to hide it even further. And that is definitely not what we want.
Is it okay to actually ask your child if they're thinking of hurting themselves or if they have been hurting themselves? Or is that like planting the seed in their head?
It is definitely important for us to be asking our kids this. And I think the more open and honest conversations that we're having with our kids about this is so important.
And let's say, okay, you've realized that your child is self-harming. What is the next step that a parent should take?
The next step for parents would definitely be figuring out if there is ongoing risk for your child. So finding out or asking your child to show you what they had been using to self-harm, if they had been using, for instance, a tool or an implement, making sure that there is a risk management plan around that. Something like, hey, I've noticed that you've been using this object to self-harm. Is it okay if we make a plan together to take that object out of your room or out of wherever you've been using it so that we can put it away in a safe place? Then we can definitely start to look at what the next steps are. So in order to see a psychologist and access things like the Medicare rebates for psychology sessions, you do need to go and see a GP.
Sam now finds that she's constantly on edge when it comes to her daughter.
It's forever reading between the lines. For example, one day if we're going to the movies, no, I don't want to go to the movies. Okay, is she really that because she's not interested in the movie, because there's something else going on? She wants to stay here because she wants to kill herself. You know what I mean? It's exhausting. It's emotionally draining.
Yeah.
Because at the beginning, I was like a hawk looking at her. And obviously that didn't work. It doesn't work. So at one point, I had to kind of decide to not give up, but step back a little bit. I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to give some room to you, but I want something back. So I work more now. I'm working more in connecting with her, not like emotionally, your feelings. Don't tell me why you hurt yourself. Just tell me how was your day today. Like basic stuff, going back to the basic stuff. But now I wouldn't say she's opening up, but I find she's more relaxed.
For parents whose teen has self-harmed, the waiting and watching can be all-consuming. Sarah, it's normal for parents to be worried about their child self-harming again, isn't it?
I absolutely think that it is our concern that the child is going to do it again. And it's interesting because sometimes if we catch it early enough, the child or the young adult might choose not to engage in this particular kind of behavior again. However, it is often an ongoing or chronic behavior, which means there could be a likelihood of our child continuing to self-harm. There has been some research into the addictive aspect of self-harming behavior. So, for instance, the behavior is likened to a dopamine hit, an addiction that is, you know, being paid off when they are engaging in this sort of behavior. What I understand about it is once you find a coping strategy that works, we tend as humans to go back to that coping strategy rather than attempting to find something alternative.
That's so interesting. I'm thinking about myself now, like the coping strategies that I use, which may involve going into the pantry and eating peanut butter with
absolutely
a spoon. So how do we lead our teens to better coping strategies?
It's difficult as parents to lead our teenagers, particularly, into different sorts of coping strategies. They may be less willing to do it if it's being suggested by a parent.
And isn't that true?
Absolutely.
If a parent has suggested it, it's immediately uncool and not listened to.
It's uncool and I don't want to listen to mum and dad and I'd rather go off.
Yeah,
literally. So being able to engage in a neutral third party, so a psychologist, they are going to be on the same side as the young person, and they are going to be supporting that young person to essentially figure out for themselves what could be alternatives to a maladaptive coping strategy such as self-harm.
And talk to me about the role of social media, but also the influence of friend groups. Because I know there are a lot of parents who've said to me that they feel like there's a sense of contagion at school amongst a friendship group where everybody is suddenly talking about self-harm, for example, and then that kind of feeds into this interest in self-harming.
I like the use of the word contagion, Beck. This is definitely something that as parents, we need to be aware of. So when a young person might engage with friends who are talking about self-harming behaviors or friends who are self-harming themselves, or if they are engaging with social media content, means that it is being normalized for them. And so this might mean that they are more likely to perhaps try that kind of behavior. And so as parents, having those open discussions with our children about what they're talking about with their friends, and also having an awareness of what our children are viewing or engaging with on social media, that is going to support us to better then support our kids.
After everything they've been through, Sam is finding it hard to trust what her daughter says.
There has been a lot of lies, you know, like things that she said, and I then later found out that she was lying. And to be honest, it's hard because there is one point that I feel that I don't know my daughter. Yeah. I don't know who she is. I don't know whether what she's saying or doing is just to keep things under control and kind of to keep me happy and keep the psychologist happy, or is how she's really feeling. It's not only about the self-harm and the risk or the fear of her dying of this.
Yeah,
it's like, I don't know how to connect to her.
How's she going now?
Oh, we have ups and downs. And so, yeah, I think there has been a small, very small steps forward.
Is she still self-harming or do you think it's finished?
No, it hasn't finished. I found out because there was a drop of blood in her pyjamas. And I said to her, look, I just want to know if you did it. And she was, yes, okay. So can you please give me whatever you did it with? I said to her, I don't think it's a good idea that you have sharp objects in your room if you are tempted to do that. She didn't agree with that at first, but then I said to her, it's like an alcoholic. Do you think an alcoholic has a bottle of wine under the bed? No. So you shouldn't have sharp objects.
Yes.
So she gave them, according to her, all the sharp objects.
Sarah, what are your thoughts on trust when self-harm has occurred?
I really want to emphasize the need for building trust. And trust with our kids starts with conversations really, really early. I mean, we might not feel comfortable or confident having these sorts of difficult conversations with our kids, but we really do need to be aware that this is happening, that our kids are exposed to it, and that we may need to step in and have these really hard conversations.
Now, Sam, our parent, was left feeling obviously devastated by what's happened with her daughter. So, Sarah, what would you say to parents out there whose worlds have been completely rocked by their child self-harming? What advice would you have?
You are not alone. that there are so many young people out there who are currently self-harming, who are not telling their parents, who are not engaging with trusted support networks. And it is so important now that you have found out about this, that you seek support for yourself. Definitely go and speak to a doctor, your GP, and seek a referral for a psychologist for yourself. There are also lots of support groups and networks out there, particularly in the online spaces, for parents who are carers of kids and teenagers who are experiencing mental health concerns.
Sam, what do you hope for the future for your daughter? Because she sounds wonderful.
She is.
Yeah.
Look, I know she's going to get through this. And I hope she's happy. That's all I hope for her.
Yes. That's all we want for our kids, isn't it?
It's interesting how things have changed, because probably when my kids were in primary school, my answer to that question, I would have said, no, I want her to go to uni and I would like her to travel the world and I would like her such and such. Now I just want her to be happy.
A huge thanks to our parent Sam for sharing all that she's been through with her daughter. We're thinking of you both. And thanks to Sarah O'Doherty, psychologist and president of the Australian Association of Psychologists, for helping us tackle this confronting issue. So, what are the big takeaways from my chat with Sam and Sarah? Well, firstly, let's accept that self-harm is happening. The stats, unfortunately, are really high and are likely to be underreported. So, if you have discovered that your child is self-harming, let me say this. It is okay to be shocked. That is normal. But it's really how you respond next that's key. Start, I guess, with the most basic safety stuff. Remove whatever they've been using to self-harm from their vicinity. Then it's to the GP, because I want you to get a referral to a mental health professional. Because as Sarah says, self-harm is actually a coping strategy. Now, obviously not a good one or a healthy one. And while you can support your child as best you can, really, it's a professional who is equipped to help your child figure out why they turned to self-harm in the first place and what alternative, healthy coping strategy they can use instead. And we're going to share some really great resources in the show notes. I'm Bec Sparrow, and you've been listening to Parental as Anything Teens. And if you know a parent who'd get something out of this episode, or any of our others, whether it's about what to do when your son has been badgering a girl for nudes, or your kid has fallen in with the so-called bad crowd, get out your phone, hit share, and let them know we're all in this together. And if you need help with your teen, send us an email to teens@abc.net.au. This podcast was recorded on the traditional lands of the Turrbal and Yagara peoples. Parental as Anything Teens is mixed by Anne-Marie de Bettencourt. It's produced by Hannah Riesch and Josie Sargent. The supervising producer is Tamar Cranswick, and Alex Lolbach is the executive producer.
Yama. My name is Rudy, and I'm a Gamilaroi girl.
Gamilaroi? What's Gamilaroi?
Being Gamilaroi means that I'm a first Australian. You know, it sounds a little funny, but there are hundreds of countries inside Australia.
No. Our country is Australia.
That's right. Australia is our country. But it's also home to hundreds of Aboriginal nations. We're all a bit different. We have our own stories and cultures, and we each speak our own language. Do you want to learn some of Australia's first words?
Yeah!
Aw, deadly! Each week, we'll travel with our ears to different Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander nations.
To Palawa country,
to Wadjigan country.
To Yarru country.
We'll listen to the sounds of their country.
We're at the mouth of the Daly River today.
Can you hear the waves crashing?
Waligara Nagula. Listen to the sea.
We're saltwater people.
And we'll learn some words in language.
Majiwargi.
Majigurjan.
That's a tricky one.
I can say Palawakani.
Great work, Mabajana.
Listen to Little Yarns every Monday at 10:30 a.m. on digital radio, anytime on the ABC Kids Listen app, or wherever you get your podcasts.